The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to John.
Glory to you, Lord Christ.
Jesus said, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ. In the name of the Holy and Undivided Trinity, Amen. You please be seated. Good morning. And happy Easter again. I have a fourth hand story for you. Try to keep it straight now. John Ortberg writes that Robert Roberts writes, I have to pause there and say, their name was Roberts and they named him Robert, really? About a family therapist named Jim Roberts, who had an amazing experience while visiting the fourth grade class of his son. The teacher had organized a balloon stomp. A balloon stomp is when every child in the class has a piece of string tied to their ankles with a balloon connected at the end of the string. The object of a balloon stomp is to obliterate everyone else's balloon without letting anything happen to your balloon. It was everyone for himself and each against all. As soon as you were stomped and your balloon was popped, you were out and you had to sit down. The child who still had an intact balloon when everyone else's was shredded was the winner. The teacher gave the signal and the children leapt ferociously on each other's balloons while trying to protect their own. All that is, except one or two who lacked the spirit of competition. They were just dismayed by all the ballyhoo and their balloons were soon laid waste. In a few seconds, all of the balloons were burst but one, the winner. Later, a class of cognitively impaired children was brought in and prepared to play the same game. Balloons were tied to their ankles and they were briefed on the rules of play. Said Roberts, I got a sinking feeling in my midsection. I wanted to spare those kids the brawl that was about to take place. They had only the foggiest notion of what all this was about. After a few moments of confusion, the idea got across to one or two of them that balloons were supposed to be stomped, and gradually it caught on. But as the game got underway, it was clear that these kids missed the spirit of it. They went about methodically, intentionally, getting their balloons stomped. One girl carefully held her own balloon in place so that a boy could pop it. And then he did the same for her. When all the balloons were gone, the entire class cheered in unison. These children, Robert said, had mistaken this brawl for an exercise in community. In the original game, only one child could win, but the rest were relegated to the place of loser. But these children discovered a way to make everyone a winner. In normal balloon stomping, the participants are alienated from each other. It's you against me, but as these children played it, the game became an occasion for love. Instead of feeling anxious about the other players, there was a sense of partnership. The play of these children seemed to foster generosity, trust, cooperation, gentleness, and concern for one another. And you have to ask yourself the question, who got the game right? Now, if we exclude the former Chicagoans in the room right now, how many of you know that the code for O'Hare Airport is ORD? Do you know that one? How many of you know why? The word, well, fewer hands there. It's because there used to be an orchard on the site of what's now O'Hare International Airport. There used to be a lot of orchards around Chicago. And in the area where I last served, the last congregation I served before St. Margaret's, at Transfiguration in Palos Park, that was the site of a beautiful orchard, and there were still plants coming up, fruit trees, and wild grapevines. Now, if you know wild grapevines, you know that they are insidious. They are a weed. They are interconnected over distances that are vast. And you pull on them, and you try to get them untangled, and it is a fool's errand. Because they go, and they go, and they go. And when you start pulling on one, and you think you're about to reach the end, it splits. And it goes in two different directions. It branches. And you think you will never reach the end of it. This gospel today is about vines and branches, about interconnectedness. And it is intertwined and complicated, not just within itself, but to the other readings we have today. In a way that is more true than usual, all of these readings are intertwined with each other. And not in a linear way. It's kind of like pulling on that vine that's like untangling Christmas lights. It is very, very difficult. They're all related to each other, and like the Ethiopian eunuch who was studying the prophet Isaiah when Philip asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" We might reply, as the eunuch did, "How can I unless someone guides me?" Well, let me attempt to be your guide this morning. I want to invite you to take out your bulletin that has the readings in it, the connections bulletin. You can see I've kind of marked mine up because I had some thoughts, and I thought at first they would be simple, and then I realized there are just all these interconnections. It's complicated. And let me also invite you to grab a hymnal, one of those red books in front of you, and turn it in advance to page 662. 662. So, in the first reading from Acts, the Acts of the Apostles, the story of the first followers of Jesus after the resurrection and then the ascension, we're hearing some tough words from the book of Isaiah describing the suffering servant of Israel. Like a sheep, he was led to the slaughter, and like a lamb silent before its shearer, so he does not open his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life is taken away from the earth. And these are hard words for the Ethiopian eunuch to digest because they're describing absolute calamity, absolute loss. And like the sheep being led to the slaughter, this suffering servant seems not to be alarmed. Now, in the case of sheep, it's probably because they're not very smart. But if we're to be compared to sheep, we know. We know that following in the way of Jesus is going to involve some loss. In fact, there's going to be some loss if we don't follow Jesus. But if we do, we know that the penalty is high, that we're going to have to take up our cross together with Jesus. And yet, the lamb does not open his mouth. In his humiliation, justice is denied him. Who can describe this generation? For his life is about to be taken from the earth. This is about fear. It's also about skipping a page. The eunuch, later in the story, asks Philip, "What is to prevent me from being baptized?" What is to prevent me from being baptized? Well, the early readers of this gospel, this book of Acts, really part of the second chapter to the book of Luke, the gospel of Luke, knows that what is to prevent a eunuch from being baptized is the rules. Eunuchs were considered ritually impure. They did not participate in the ceremonies of other people. They did not have these kind of dignities afforded to them. What is to prevent me from being baptized? The reader of that time would have immediately understood the rules, the fact that you are a eunuch. Now, rules are good. Rules bring order and purpose. But rules and laws are human, and they're not complete. Lawrence Kohlberg's studies of moral behavior notes that the first motivation isn't good order when it comes to following rules, not even justice, and not even love. It's fear. Fear of punishment. Rules are there to protect us from going astray. Rules are there to protect us from loss, but they are imperfect. Fear is absolutely primal to us as human beings. It's the deepest emotion, it's the deepest reaction we have in our brains. It's set deep, deep inside our brains, to the most primitive parts of our brains, so that we share it in common with lizards. Lizards can fear. Lizards know what it is to be threatened and how to react, either by running away or by fighting. Fight or flight, right? The deepest possible reaction. The fear felt by the early Christians to whom the book of Acts is written is that they know the stakes are high in the gospel and they have lost the person of Jesus. He's died, he's resurrected, and then he's ascended, and he's not there to tell them what to do. And they're trying to figure out how to find their way forward in that fearful situation. That fear of the early Christians is articulated by Thomas the Apostle when he is talking to Jesus and he says, "Lord, how can we know the way?" And Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. Follow me." Now we know that the antidote to fear is love. But it is not our first impulse, and it is not our deepest. We have to be taught how to love. We have to be taught, because we don't really know how to do love. We know how to feel it, but we don't instinctively know how to do it. St. Paul writes about love in 1 Corinthians, and he describes it. Love is patient, love is kind. You know that one? He tells us what love is like, but he doesn't tell us how love works. He doesn't tell us how to love, or even why. That has to be taught. And that's where John comes in, writing in our second reading today from 1 John. And he describes it meticulously, connecting the dots. So let's follow in 1 John. It'll be hard to follow me, but I bet you can. Everyone who is born of God knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for, and here's the first part, the most important piece here, God is love. That's the first link in the chain. Everyone who's born of God knows God. Whoever does not know God, or whoever does not know love doesn't know God, because God is love. So God's love was revealed among us so that we might live through Jesus. And beloved, since God loved us so much, we ought to love one another. Then he gets to the part again, articulating the fear. No one has seen God. Therefore, we don't know how to love God. We don't know how to relate to God in the first place because we haven't seen God. But John goes on to say, if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is perfected in us. Well, there's two things that need to be unpacked a little bit. No one has seen God, but if the antidote is, if we love one another, God lives in us. Now, this living in is a little different from, like, where do you live? What is your address? It doesn't pertain to us, a place. It means, where do you live? How do you live your life? You live in something or someone. We're called to live in God, or to abide in God. And his love is perfected in us. Now, this perfection, again, requires a little explanation. Not perfection like having all the flaws removed, getting it just right, a perfect game, a perfect concert, being without error or blemish or stain or anything like that. Perfection here is more completion, purpose, fulfillment of what it's there to do, or, to switch back to the gospel, bearing fruit. So when we're talking about perfect love, we're not talking about flawless love. None of us will know that in this life. We're talking instead about love that has been perfected, brought to its purpose, so that it bears fruit. And he goes on to say, God abides in those who confess that Jesus is the Son of God, and they abide in God. And now for the second time he says, God is love. To make that connection crystal clear. And those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. Repeats it again. And he says, love that has been perfected among us is this. Now we're going to tie it back again to Acts. That we may have boldness on the day of judgment. Because as he is, so are we in this world. What's the day of judgment? Death. Loss. Calamity. Like a sheep, we are led to the slaughter. And like a lamb, silent before its shearer. So we do not open our mouth. In our humiliation, justice will be denied to us. Who can describe this generation? For our life is to be taken from the earth. It's a fearful thing. That fear is primal. It's natural. It's normal. It's our first reaction. And fear is connected to a particular fear, the fear of loss, the fear of losing what we already have, like our physical security, our physical integrity, like our possessions, like losing the care and attention and love of those who love us. About losing our health, about, and we all know this one, losing our youth, losing our vitality, losing those we love, That one hurts. Losing our own lives, and we will. And the overarching loss is control. Loss of any control that we ever perceived that we had over our fate, over our destiny. So back to 1 John. Feeling those Christmas lights coming untangled? He says then, there is no fear in love. Because perfect love, that is love that is bearing fruit, doing what it's there to do, casts out the fear. For fear has to do with punishment. And whoever fears has not reached perfection in love. Now, that doesn't mean that love will take away the loss. We will still suffer loss. We will still have fear. But perfected love, where we experience it, will cast out fear. How do we conquer our own fear? By nurturing love. Fear is not just a feeling we experience, it's an action we take. When we react in disrespect and discourtesy and rudeness and abuse to each other, we are acting out of fear. And love is not just a feeling. Love is an action. Love is a decision that we choose to make. Again, perfection, bearing fruit. We need to love one another in our action, and the feeling will follow. Because we love because God first loved us. And we're called to abide in love. In his Easter Day sermon, Gary Hall said that Mary, with the women at the tomb, was fearful when she saw whom she supposed to be a gardener at the empty tomb. And she was terrified. Until Jesus spoke her name in love. When God speaks our name to us, when we speak names to each other, when we love each other, when we respond to each other in love, perfected love, Mary's eyes were open, and ours can be too. Because perfect love casts out fear. That's why this is an Easter theme, because that is the power of resurrection. So to John's gospel again, vines and branches. We are connected to each other, and only through that connection to each other are we connected back to God. Abide in me as I abide in you, Jesus says. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit and find perfection by itself, unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing. Abide in me, love one another. That is the gospel of resurrection. What is to prevent us from being baptized? And I don't mean the ceremony and the water. I mean, what is to prevent us from being bound to Christ, grafted to the vine, to give up the things we're so afraid of losing, and no longer fearing the loss? Let's bear fruit. Let's abide in one another. Let's abide in Jesus. Let's practice it today. So I want to invite you to sing with me hymn number 662. Would you please stand?